Welcome to Public Safety Talk Radio, the podcast for all of our heroes in public safety, including law enforcement professionals, firefighters, EMTs, corrections officers, healthcare workers, and more. The show is produced by the POCUA and is founded upon its Soundness Initiative. This episode is sponsored by the Finest Service Organization, a provider of line-of-duty death loan protection through many of our POCUA institutions. I am Ken Bader, your host for Public Safety Talk Radio, and we're back! We're back for Season 5, and I'm kicking it off with what I think is going to be one of our best episodes of Season 5, if not overall. I've got another fellow podcaster with me here today, and somebody who definitely knows about public safety. Let me tell you a little bit about him. His name is Brandon Hall, and he is from, and he's a native of Nashville, Tennessee. For the last 20 years, more than 20 years, he has been an emergency 911 dispatcher with Metro Nashville Department of Emergency Communications. Say that fast three times. He has been the calm voice at the end of 911 calls and hundreds of thousands of incidents, including nationally recognized events such as the Nashville Christmas Day bombing, the 2010 flood, and numerous active shooters. And he is also, as I alluded to, the host of Music 911. Had the opportunity to meet him and do a nice little article and podcast magazine on his podcast. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Ken. Excited to be here.
You've got a deeper voice than I am. I don't know if this is going to work.
it'll even out in the middle.
Do you ever get people that call you at 911 and say, "Wow, you got a sexy voice, man. I don't have a problem anymore. I just want to talk to you."
I've had a couple.
Really? It's always funny when I come out with one of my stupid jokes and my host is actually, yeah, that's happened.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not very often, but it has.
Well, good for you, man. I'm proud of you in this very strange way. But let's talk about the profession a little bit. You know, you've been in this profession for over two decades. Yeah, and that's a long time to be doing this. And thank you for your service. I appreciate what you do. How has the job changed, if at all, over those last 20 plus years?
I mean, really, if you think about it, I started in the year 2000. And one of the biggest jumps from then till now is the fact that in the year 2000, not everybody had cell phones and almost everybody still had a landline. Yeah. So when people call in, they were calling from their home phone. We would still, even back then, you know, you think 2000 is not that far back. That's, you know, it's getting on to, it's 23 years ago.
Yeah.
So back then somebody would have a wreck, not have a telephone and have to walk to someone's house, knock on the door and say, "Hey, can I use your phone? I got in a wreck." So, I mean, that's one of the biggest things probably that's changed overall. Now everybody has one, if not more, cell phones. So they just, you know, can call from wherever. And you know, it's a good and a bad thing. It's a, you know, good thing because you can call right from wherever you're at, but on the same note, you can call whenever the thought hits you about anything. So, instead, you know, someone who's calling in saying, "Oh, I got in a fight last night and I'd like to make a report about it." "Okay, where are you at?" "Oh, I'm driving on the interstate." "Okay, well, we can't send police to you while you're driving." So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good point. You know, not being ignorant to your area of expertise. I do know that, you know, you used to be able back in the day, if it was a landline, to be able to track that pretty quickly and send help. I understand it's not the same with cell phones, although that technology has gotten a lot better over the years. Is that a correct statement?
It is. Used to, when we get the landline, it goes through this database. If you had a landline, it was in there in the database, exactly where your address was. I mean, it was very rare that we had any type of mistakes with it. And now it's when we started getting GPS from cell phones, it was horrible. It was genuinely horrible. The first time they said that it was going to be somewhere of a radius of 400 meters. And if you can think in a downtown area, for instance, you're calling 911, that can be several square blocks. There's no way to pinpoint. And now it's, for the most part, depending on what kind of phone you have, how new it is, the GPS technology in it, it can hone it down to a few feet. But it jumps around too. It all depends on, like I said, all those things I said just now about it.
I would hope that it would be better. 400 meters, you know, I don't know the metric system very well, but that's a big area. You're looking at a corner or an intersection, and the crime's happening in an alley two blocks away. That's an issue.
Or more, exactly.
Well, you know, as I mentioned maybe before, you know, I've only been in Nashville a few times. I've always enjoyed my time in Nashville, but it's been one of those cities that I've noticed that's really, really boomed. You know, for instance, I'm going to date myself. I was there in the 80s as a kid. My parents took me on this exotic vacation to Tennessee. no dissing on Tennessee, but you know, when you're like 11, 12, you know, you want to go to
the beach.
Yeah, you want to go to California or big amusement parks. Like, hey, we're going to Nashville.
Oh yeah.
but I remember it being a nice, seeming like a nice little town in the 80s, and then 20 years later I went as an adult for a football game, and it was definitely bigger but still had kind of a small town feel. And then about 4 or 5 years ago I went as a business person for an event, and I'm like, wow, this is like a huge, big, sprawling city. I don't remember it being that way. Can you talk a little bit about number one, the change in Nashville, being a native from there, and what that has meant to your profession and other public safety professionals, that big boom that it seemingly has had in that city?
Yeah, the increase of people here, it's really amazing. During the day, we can have some anywhere up to 1.5 million people in the town. They come from all over the place, people living outside the county, and it's just, it's a drain on resources because we can't keep up with it. And I mean, just like anybody else, you've talked with police officers, firefighters before, it's really hard to keep up because the demand is always there. There's always crime. There's always people needing an ambulance. And the more people you put in that, the mix, the harder it is. For us, we've kept up pretty well, but if the volume keeps up the way it is and keeps increasing like it is, it's just going to outpace us. It's starting to outpace the police department. It's going to outpace us, the fire department. And that's, you know, truth be told, that's probably a lot of places that you're seeing. I mean, it can be a number of different reasons why we can't hire and keep enough people to work for us. And even then, that's probably still not enough, even if you're fully staffed, because it's so many people.
Yeah, I think it's a slightly different dynamic, because I grew up and lived most of my life in Chicago, and then, you know, I wanted, you know, more congestion and pollution and crime, so I went and moved to Los Angeles.
That'll do it.
And, you know, with those cities, you know, because it's the second and third largest metro area in the country, it seems like, you know, there seems to be always a shortage of first responders, but it's because of the size of the city and the ability to recruit good people for those jobs. You know, places like a Nashville, Phoenix, Vegas, Houston, you know, seem to me a different problem, and maybe I'm ignorant to it, is that, all right, we had this handled when we were at X, but here we are, you know, 9 months, 18 months later, and we're at Y. Yeah. And, you know, now all of a sudden we've got to scramble. Is that stupidity on my part, or is that true?
No, it's absolutely true. Everything, I mean, it as much as you talk with people, government related, government just generally moves slow. It's because it has to go through so many red tapes and things like that, just to get anything approved. And because of that, it's a slow moving process. And that's why one of the reasons I think that it'll, unless a huge, huge change happens, that it'll just never catch up.
Yeah. That's unfortunate, unless, you know, some things change. Have you seen a change in general? You know, have you seen over the 20 years a change in the calls and the emergencies that you've seen because of the growth of the city? Or is it just the same as it was 15, 20 years ago, just more of it?
Yeah, I think crime in general is kind of remained the same. there's been some things that have changed along the way, but not necessarily because of the time. It's just because of technology. Like now, the cars that are being stolen, I mean, back in, like you were talking about the 80s, somebody could go and find a Honda or a Ford or something like that, hop in there, pop the steering wheel pretty much, you know, and the, just throw in the hot wire just really quick. You're in and out of there in a couple minutes. And now with the technology that came with the cars and things like that, they, it's almost difficult to hot wire a car like that. So they're looking for people who are leaving their keys in their car or leaving their car running. And if they, it's a kind of an opportunity type thing. So if they do that, they'll hop in and just drive off with it and then start using that car for other crimes.
Yeah. The big thing out here in LA County, especially Long Beach where I live, is you don't hear too much about stolen cars. But you know, there's catalytic converters and, you know, people are, you know, bashing in windows to take stuff in cars because that's a lot easier. But anyhow,
yeah, that, believe me, it happens way more than people think.
Yeah. Yeah. I always, you know, I don't want to, you're going into the true crime genre. I never want to victim blame. Yeah, but you know, I see some of this, some of these reports and some of these posts on social media, and they say, "Oh, you know, my iPad got stolen, my iPhone got stolen, my brand new Xbox earphones got stolen, you know, and you know, all my grandmother's jewelry, and you know, I just happened to leave it in plain view in the back seat." Yeah. You know, well, what did you think was going to happen?
Yeah, and come on, and man. It's really difficult with something like that to actually put something good with it, because you think about it, in a perfect world, you should be able to leave stuff, your doors unlocked at night and stuff like that. And, you know, yes, you should take precautions. Just like if you're about to take a wrong turn into a bad neighborhood, take a precaution, don't do it. But at the same time, you shouldn't be necessarily held because of someone else's criminality. If I had my house broken into and I get a TV stolen or something like that, is it really my fault because my house had a loose door, or, you know, had a door that would be kicked in very easily? So I kind of see both sides of it. It's obviously I don't victim blame or something like that for anything like that, but at the same time, you do have to have a little bit of common sense along with it.
Yeah, as I was speaking to another great podcaster, Lori Morrison, who's been on the show, who does The Unlovely Truth.
Lori. She lives probably about 15 minutes from me.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think she's a Tennessee gal. And, we had this talk about, you know, unfortunately, what happens to some college women and so forth. And the point that we both made was, you know, the fact that you've put yourself into an unfortunate situation doesn't make it any less of a crime by the perpetrator.
Exactly. Yeah. That's an excellent example. I mean, you can, you know, theoretically, the whole bad neighborhoods scenario, I should be able to walk down a bad neighborhood where they're doing whatever. I was going to say selling drugs, but they shouldn't do that. But, you know, doing anything on the corner, and I should be able to wave $1,000 in cash and nobody approached me. But it doesn't happen. That's not the way it happens.
Yeah, that's unfortunately not the world we live in. No, in, not at all. In Nashville, Los Angeles, or Chicago. But let's get back to the podcast, because I've obviously had a chance to listen to it, had a chance to see your presentation at the last Crime Con. Really quality work, an awesome podcast. You know, tell us a little bit about, you know, what was the motivation to create Music City 911, and how has it helped the listeners? You know, did you wake up one night with epiphany? It's like, I need to do Music City 911. You know, how did that come about?
No, I've just had a few friends, over the years, tell me that I should write a book. I mean, it's because I've been through a lot with the dispatching and everything. And I was like, first off, it's been done. And, when I started the show, the biggest thing I wanted to do was kind of highlight dispatchers and what we actually do, what we have to go through, what kind of environments we're, you know, pushed in front of, that type thing. And it's something a lot of people don't really know. A lot of the TV shows they have, some of them play actual real 911 calls, but a lot of them are reenactments. So, and you don't really get that feel. You don't you don't get the rawness of it. And that's why a lot of my stuff that I play on the show, it's completely and totally uncut. It's, you get everything with it. It's, sometimes it'll make you cry. Sometimes it'll make you not want to sleep at night. So, and that's stuff that we deal with almost on a daily basis, a lot of it. So yeah. I wanted to put that out there for the public, and I wanted to be both entertaining and educational with it. That way people would keep listening, and also they know what to do in a 911 situation like that. I just had a listener a couple of days ago, right on, I've got a discussion board, and they said they had to call 911, and they said they were on and off the phone within a minute because they knew how to answer, like how to, you know, formulate what kind of questions were going to come and how to formulate their answers a lot quicker that way. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely helping people too.
Yeah. One of the things I remember from your presentation, I believe that's where I learned it. Maybe it was from your podcast. But it was something to the effect of get the address and location out first or really, really quickly. And fortunately, you know, knock on wood, and I hope I never have to call 911 again. I've only had to call 911 once. And, you know, and if I ever have to do that again, I think, all right, you know, first thing, it's like, I'm at, you know, XXXXX, you know, State Street, and this is what's happening. And I could envision somebody like yourself being on the other line and say, okay, I got an address, I got a place to start right here, and helping you get people out right away.
Yeah. The very first thing with any 911 call, or actually with the police, just non-emergency type calls too, you want to get an address, because if we don't have that, we can't do anything at all. I mean, we can try calling them back, yes, but that's only if we have the phone number and, you know, a number of other things. But if we get that and nothing else, we can at least send the police department, fire department, whoever out there to investigate what's happening. And then if needs be, send more equipment, more responders, whatever from there.
Yeah. Yeah. What are some of the other things? Because I know that you chat with your listeners. You're not just you're not just a pretty face and a good voice behind a mic. Yeah. What are some
face for radio? I don't know what you're talking
about. That's my line. Yeah. What's some of the feedback you get from listeners is, if, you know, because I listened to Music City 911, I knew how to do X, or it taught me this.
Yeah. They, kind of like I was saying with the last one, and actually the incident that happened with this one was a woman who heard some commotion next door. I'm not sure if they live in an apartment or a house or whatever it was, but she looked over and saw a woman that was screaming at someone else to give her money or something like that. And they start pushing each other, and it's likely some sort of a domestic or maybe drug, maybe both type situation. I'm not sure, but she was able to call in and get everything out that she needed to. She relayed exactly what she was seeing, and apparently did that, and the police got there quickly. And I didn't follow up with her just yet, but I'm imagining they effected some sort of arrest from it. So, but yeah, I've had several people say they've had to call. Got another listener who has just chronic medical problems. She's in and out of the hospital all the time, and she has to call 911 pretty frequently. And she said after she started listening to the show, it got much easier to do that. So she knew what questions were going to come and how to get through them very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's an interesting question for you. Maybe it's just for my edification as a civilian, and obviously most of our listeners are first responders, but we've got some civilians that listen to Public Safety Talk Radio as well. There was always kind of an ongoing debate at some of our community meetings here when we've had chief of police or sergeant and so forth. And people have said, well, you know, I didn't want to call 911. I thought it was something small. I don't want to. They legitimately, and I appreciate sincerely, didn't want to bother you guys from doing real work. And I remember, you know, the chief saying, you know what, nothing is more frustrating than having had a crime happen and then canvassing the area and talking to somebody, he's like, yeah, I thought something was weird. You know, I thought it was really strange when, you know, when a guy I never saw before was taking John's 75-inch screen and walking it over to a van that's never been in this neighborhood. But, you know, I didn't want to bother you guys, you know, with something trivial. And the chief even says, like, you have my permission. If you feel that something's a little off, you don't have to call the non-emergency number. Just dial 911 and we'll ascertain exactly, you know, what the threat is. If there's nothing wrong and you've called sincerely, we're not going to be upset. And from a 911 dispatcher perspective, yeah, do you mind those calls? You know, or is that just, you know, kind of like, hey, you know, you should have called the non-emergency number, man.
No, if it's something that's, I would say in the more legit side. I mean, I always try to push to people, call 911 if it's a life-threatening or potentially life-threatening emergency. The people who call and say, oh, someone just backed into me in the parking lot. You know, that there's no injuries. There's minimal damage to the car. They could have, I mean, I don't like say sit and wait on the non-emergency line, but if there's a small backup of a couple minutes or something like that, it's fine for someone to actually wait through that while someone else. The biggest thing with me is the fact that if we're all on 911 calls, and if you think about it like this, your mom or your grandmother, she's trying to call in because an intruder came into her house and started stabbing her in the back, but she couldn't get through because you're sitting in the parking lot and, you know, you had somebody open their car door into yours. Yeah. That's where I would much rather have someone call 911 if there's nothing else. I mean, if there's no other choice, but you've got, everybody's got a cell phone. Everybody's got Google. Yeah. Everybody can look up what the Nashville Police Department's phone number is, or the Phoenix, or wherever you're at. It just takes a couple seconds. So, yes, we would rather hear it. Yes, absolutely. Especially, you know, like you probably saying in a smaller town or something like that, a lot of places they're like, okay, just call us, period.
Yeah.
We would like people to call, 911 when it's only actually an emergency, but we still get thousands of calls per year that are not, and that we still handle them.
Yeah. I think there's, you know, if you see a scratch on your car door, you know, call your insurance company. You know, but if, you know, your neighbor's, you know, door is wide open and you're calling him on the phone and you're not getting an answer, you know, maybe the 911 call is appropriate.
Yeah, something like that. Absolutely. That's potentially a life-threatening emergency because we don't know, that person could have fell out and had a seizure, passed out, cardiac arrest, or somebody could have broken the front door and is in there actively right now stealing and, or, you know, holding them up at gunpoint. You don't know.
Right. Exactly. So to get back on one of the many things I like about your podcast is you do use actual 911 calls.
Yeah.
And that's probably why I can't listen to your show on a regular basis, because some of those bluntly are chilling. And some other great podcasts have used 911 live or real 911 calls before. And, you know, if I'm walking, listening, you sometimes, you know, and maybe it's just me, hearing those calls are more difficult psychologically than seeing the aftermath on a picture of a crime scene. Do you hear that as well? Or, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's all disturbing, but yeah, my point is that if those types of calls on a regular basis have to take some kind of emotional and psychological toll on the folks that do the job that you guys do.
Oh yeah. It's an actual problem. People who just, they walk in from the street, they don't really know what to expect. And that's why one of the reasons why the turnover rate is so bad in our industry, and same thing with other first responders, is that they get this kind of notion of what they may see on TV. And it's not that. It's, you know, people that, if you see something on a 911 dispatch show or movie or something along that lines, you've got a huge room full of people and they're just kind of chilling out. And every once in a while, there's a phone call. That's not like that at all. It's back to back almost all day long, most of the time. And there's very little breaks, especially, you know, during the busier seasons like the summer. Uh-huh. So it can, for someone who's not really used to it or doesn't have a honed in mindset or just kind of I guess that mindset in general,
yeah,
it's a little bit harder for them and they usually don't make it, but the people who've been there for a long time, it's kind of routine now. I've had another listener asking me just the other day, how do you do this? How do you field these calls? And I'm like, okay, well, for example, someone who might see a wreck with injuries, you might see one of those out on the street driving once every 3 or 4 or 5 months. Mm-hmm. I talk to dozens of people every single day with that. So it's normal to me. Someone might have a relative or a friend or a loved one, someone like that, that passes away. And that happens once every few years.
Yeah.
2 or 3 times a day. Seriously. I'm dealing with something like that. So it's just repetitive, and it's hard to say that you want to become routine, but at the same time, if you're the caller on the other end, if you have a real emergency like that, you want to have someone who's been there, who's done it, who it is routine. That way they can get the help out there as quick as they can.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you find ways to deal with it? Has it become such a profession where you have it all down, or, you know, are there times I would assume that you need to take a pause? You know, how do you handle your own mental and psychological health with, you know, not only doing the job, but also doing a show on the job?
I mean, truth be told, it doesn't have a huge effect on me, just like I said, because I've done so much of it. And I've tried to estimate how many calls I've had a hand in, either talking to them on the telephone or dispatching police or fire to the scene, give them info about it. In the time I've been there, probably just me, over 1 million calls, somewhere around there. So it's
probably more.
There's a lot. I mean, you think about it, anywhere from 100 to 250, 300 calls a day that I'm dealing with personally myself, and doing that for 23 years, it's a lot of calls. So like I said, now it's kind of routine. One of the things I've always said, and you can ask almost any 911 dispatcher and probably police officer, firefighters, they might not remember what they went on, responded to, talked on the phone to a week ago, but they can tell you what happened to, you know, in the first month they were on the job.
Yeah.
And it's the same way with me. I couldn't tell you probably one call that I took last week, but I can tell you several the first month that I was there 23 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. So as we begin to wrap up here, for any folks that might be watching or listening that, you know, may be thinking about a career like yours, you know, they might be thinking, you know, well, you know, maybe riding in a car, you know, in an ambulance or anything like that isn't for me, but I could be on the phone. What's some advice to a future 911 operator that you could give out there?
One of the biggest things is try to be okay with multitasking. When I say that, I'm not joking at all. You have to be able to do 3 or 4 things at one time. You have to be able to type very fast. You have to keep a level head. And it's one of those things that I can't stress the level head enough. If you get on there and show emotion to your callers or the officers, if they get in a shootout while you're on the radio with them and you start screaming as well, it's just going to lead them to do the same thing. If you stay calm while all this is happening, you can get your resources out there while you're doing the multitasking, and just keep the level head, try to keep calm with it. And know walking in too, that it's going to be difficult. It's going to be really hard. And it might just, as much as you want to do it, it just might not be for you. There's no harm in that at all. You went, you tried, you did your best, you know, and maybe you can move on to something else within the public safety sector, but it's just really not for everybody. So just kind of keep that in mind too, so you won't be as let down if it's not right for you. If it is right for you, good. Come and join us. Let's do it.
That sounds like great advice, and I won't be doing your job anytime soon. Not only do I not think that I have the temperament for it, I definitely do not type fast, so that would be a problem. So as we wrap up, can you tell folks how best to find Music City 911 out there?
You can look it up on any podcast app. You can come to my website, musiccity911.com. Listen, I've got several episodes. When I say several, I think I'm up to about 140, 150 episodes now. So you've got plenty to binge through. And that's what a lot of people say they do. They say once they listen, they just binge through the whole thing, and then they get kind of bored waiting for the next week to come for another show to come out. So yeah. I actually had one listener tell me at one point, and this is, at this point I might have had 75 or 80 episodes, but she said, well, I had a break from school. She's a school teacher and says that I've got that I binged your show and listened to all the episodes. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. Yeah. And she's like, yeah, it took me about 36 hours to do it. But I was like, oh, that's
in a row.
That's
cool.
That's what I found out. Yeah. Wow. I thought it was over, you know, a week or two, but no, she said she sat up for 36 hours straight listening with no sleep or anything. So that was, yeah, it's nice hearing, but please don't do that. Please don't deprive yourself of sleep. You can listen to it later. I promise.
Yeah, it'll still be there. Yeah, to all the folks out there listening and watching, definitely check out Music City 911. But we don't suggest that you listen to every episode in a row. You listen to a couple while you're driving, do something else, go for a walk, play with your dog, and then a few days later, listen to another episode or two. But definitely listen to it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, definitely listen. Absolutely.
Brandon, you have been an awesome guest. You do an awesome show. And most importantly, I really appreciate what you do. I appreciate your service. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for having a show like this, too, to get the word out about people in the first responder field, too. Yeah, it's amazing.
No, it's my pleasure. I love doing it. Thank you again. And thank you to all of you who have either watched or listened to this episode of Public Safety Talk Radio. And we'll be back with you next week with another great guest.
Public Safety Talk Radio is produced by the POCUA. POCUA is a consortium of financial institutions serving law enforcement as well as other first responders and public safety professionals. To learn more about our association and to find one of our credit unions or service providers near you, go to www.policecreditunions.com. And always remember, if you aren't working with one of our POCUA credit unions, you're just banking with an institution that just so happens to serve first responders. As a public safety professional, you and your family deserve better. Find a POCUA credit union today.